is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
There's a million different ways to win basketball games, but you know, I know one thing, if you don't have the buy-in, if you don't have strong relationships with your players, I don't care what you do, you know, you're not winning consistently.
Luke Stuckey is the boys basketball head coach at Yuma Catholic High School in Yuma, Arizona. Stuckey has experience at all levels of the game, from high school to the NBA. Collegiately, he served as the head men's basketball coach at NJCAA D1 Lincoln Trail College in Robinson, Illinois, from 2016 to 2021. Prior to that, he was an assistant for one season at NCAA D2 Cameron University in Lawton, Oklahoma. Stuckey began his career at La Jolla High School in California as a JV coach and varsity assistant from 2004 to 2008. He served as the head coach at San Dieguito Academy from 2004 to 2008, where his school hosted summer pickup games for NBA players, including Kawhi Leonard and Klay Thompson. Luke developed a relationship with then-Spurs shooting coach Chip England, who eventually recommended him to Orlando Magic head coach Jock Vaughn. Stuckey was hired by Vaughn in 2012 and worked primarily in player development with the Magic until 2014, when he decided to leave the NBA to pursue a college coaching position.
Hey Hoopheads, check out the Triple Threat sales event this September from our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. They're offering $3,000 off their All-Star Plus machine, $1,000 off their Dr. Dish home machine, and $100 off their IC3. Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
This is Billy Hansen, author of Harder Than I Thought, Easier Than I Feared, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads mentorship program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Jot down some notes as you listen to this episode with Luke Stuckey, boys basketball head coach at Yuma Catholic High School in the state of Arizona. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, and we are pleased to be joined by Luke Stuckey, the head boys basketball coach at Yuma Catholic High School in Yuma, Arizona. Excited to have you on. Looking forward to diving into all the things that you've been able to do in your coaching career. You've got a wide variety of experiences at lots of different levels in the game. So I think for our coaches that are out there, you're going to really enjoy hearing Luke's story and just the different things that he's been able to do throughout his career. I want to go back in time, Luke, to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about some of your first experiences that you remember with the game of basketball. What made you fall in love with it?
The fall in love part of it was really for two reasons. The first being Michael Jordan, and the second, my pops. I grew up just south of Chicago, right during, the Jordan years, and, being a young kid, right place, right time, man. I just loved everything about the Bulls, Michael Jordan. It was just something to watch when you're that age. I just idolized, Mike and everything about him, the way he carried himself, his swagger, how he played the game, and, many, many, many nights in the backyard trying to be Michael Jordan, posted up my little brother. So, he was one of the big reasons why I fell in love with the game. And then the second reason, like I mentioned before, my dad, he was a brief college basketball player, allegedly a good high school player. I've never seen the game film. the only thing I've seen is some newspaper clippings, but, his claim to fame is he scored 18 points on Jack Sikma. But if you read further down the column, I think Jack had like 34 and his team won by 20 or 30. So
did your
dad was a big influence.
Did he have as good a hair? Did he have as good a hair as Jack Sikma?
Not, and nowhere near the post game either. So, so he was a big influence. He loved the game. He coached a little bit. And, he took me to just a lot of different games. Every year it was kind of a tradition with me and him. We would go to the Illinois High School basketball tournament. And, those are some of my greatest memories as a little kid, going and watching these great high school players in the state of Illinois. Kevin Garnett, Ronnie Fields, those guys are just like heroes to me. And, it was a little tradition we had. So being around the game all the time. And then just growing up, during those Jordan years, it was easy to fall in love with the game.
All right, let's talk a little Michael Jordan. I can't let that pass because anybody who listens to this podcast knows that I am probably one of the biggest Michael Jordan fans, supporters, advocates of him being the greatest of all time. And to me, it's not even a discussion. So give me your case for Michael Jordan, greatest of all time, your experiences with being a fan of Jordan, just what makes you believe that he's the greatest player of all time? Just give me your memories, things that stand out to you as a basketball coach.
It was never a question of, if the Bulls were going to win or if Michael Jordan was going to come up with a clutch play at the end. It was like, well, how is he going to? You just knew it was going to happen. And man, he didn't let you down often. He came through just so many times, and that was just amazing to watch him do that, as a kid, your memory's probably a little skewed, but he was just, you were shocked almost when something happened. I remember when they lost to Orlando, when he made his comeback, and you were just shocked that he didn't come through for you. And so, just time and time again, how he came through in the clutch with big shots, even though everybody knew, or big plays, he was going to have the ball. He still just came through. And as a kid, that was just so fun to watch.
I think the thing for me, the word that I always use, and I think it goes to exactly what you just talked about, was when you watched Michael Jordan play, you just felt like he was inevitable. And whether that was him individually coming through with a big shot or a big play or whatever needed to be done in order to win a game, you just knew that that was going to happen. And then conversely, with his team, same way. You always felt like somehow, some way, Jordan was going to get it done and the Bulls were going to win games. And I've never watched any other athlete in any other sport where I could sit and feel as confident that no matter what the game looked like or what the situation was, that somehow, some way he was going to get it done and he was going to win. And I just think there's never been another athlete, and there's never been certainly another basketball player that combines the athleticism and then just the incredible will to win and thrive under pressure that Michael Jordan has. And as great as guys in the game today are, and obviously there's a lot of people that feel like LeBron is encroaching on Michael Jordan's territory as the greatest of all time, I think if you lived through both eras, and as you said, maybe we're skewed and maybe you look back and the guy that you followed as a kid, you're probably partial to that person, but we live here in Cleveland. And so we rooted for LeBron as a fan of the Cavaliers and as a huge fan of LeBron James as well. But to me,
I just don't think that there's anybody that's approached that level of skill and the mental side of the game better than Michael Jordan. It's hard to imagine that. It's hard to imagine anybody ever will, Luke. I find it hard to believe.
Watching that that series that came out about the Bulls and Michael Jordan there during the pandemic, it just confirmed everything that, you know, I already kind of knew going into it. But yeah, there's been a lot of good players come along before, after Mike. But yeah, you never had that feeling like when he was watching that. I like the word you use. It was inevitable, you know. Even watching LeBron, he's great, but you don't have that same feeling that it's inevitable, you know? And yeah, that's why I love the guy.
Yeah, I could have watched 50 hours of that documentary. They could have just thrown it all together. Whatever was left on the cutting room floor, I could have watched hours and hours and hours of that thing. It was incredible. So going back to your experiences, obviously Jordan has a big influence. Your dad has a big influence on you, and just the opportunity to go and watch games with him and him putting that love for the game, instilling that in you. When did coaching get on your radar? Was that something that you started to think about as a kid while you were still playing? Or was that something that didn't come to you until after you were done with your playing career?
It slowly developed. You know, I think I always kind of analyzed the game a little bit growing up as a kid, you know, watching, but I think one of the best things that ever happened to me is, you know, an injury, honestly, where, you know, during my high school, my college career, I just had kind of a chronic knee injury, and, you know, it kind of slowed my career down to the point where it's like, well, man, I'm probably not going to be able to stay in the game as a player. I'm probably nowhere near good enough to earn a living as a player, but I got to stay in this somehow. I love it too much. And, so, you know, the next best thing is coaching. And so, you know, during my college years is when I really started to think about it and really get into it and know that, you know, this was going to be a path forward for me and a great way to just stay involved with the game.
Did you initially think when you were started to think about coaching, were you thinking about it from a high school coaching perspective? Were you thinking, hey, maybe eventually I'd like to coach in college? Just where was your mindset? Or was it more, I really don't care what the level is, I just want to get into coaching? Where were you with it when you first started?
I played junior college basketball, and you know, I thought my college coach, he had a great gig. You know, he kind of taught a few classes and, you know, coached some pretty talented guys. And, you know, at first I thought, man, that wouldn't be a bad way to make a living, you know, coaching, recruiting your own team. And you know, as I got a little older, the high school level was very appealing. That's where I got my start, was at the high school level. But yeah, I guess I really never honed in on one specific level, and definitely the NBA was never on my radar. Yeah, I think to start, you know, I would have loved to just been a small college coach. But you know, my path's kind of taken me all over, and you know, I've been really fortunate.
So was your first experience as a coach when you coached at La Jolla High School as an assistant coach, or did you have some experiences before that, maybe on lower levels before you got into the high school level?
First true coaching experience, I would say. Took me 5 years to graduate college, and that fifth year, I put together a little travel team. And that was, you know, kind of my start of coaching. And did it in my hometown, got some kids together and played in some tournaments, which was a lot of fun. And, you know, that's kind of where I got my feet wet, got my start in coaching. But my first true coaching experience was at La Jolla High. And, you know, I was so lucky to have that opportunity. My brother was living out in San Diego. He's a Navy SEAL out there, still is out there. And, you know, he just kept telling me what a great place San Diego was, and you got to come out here and see it. So the first thing I did when I graduated was got my car, packed my stuff, and moved out to San Diego. And, just by pure coincidence, happened to meet, one of my coaching mentors, a guy by the name of Kamal Asaf. You know, he was just a great mentor for me. He was the head coach at La Jolla High. It was his first head coaching experience. He brought me in as a freshman coach my first year, And he was just such a great teacher of the game. I learned so much from him. And yeah, that's where I really got my start.
What did you like about coaching right from the start? If you can remember back to that first year, what's something you're like, oh man, this is, I love this aspect of coaching.
You know, especially with young kids that are just learning the game, you know, you're teaching new things to them and, you know, it's real raw and, you know, they really don't know what they're doing yet. And there's a lot of work to be put in. You know, it's going to take, you know, a lot of work, a lot of practice hours, a lot of reps to get anywhere near where you want your team to be, especially when you're coaching at that freshman level. But just the process and, you know, seeing the kids buy in to your program and what you're teaching them, you know, it's just so rewarding to see that and to have that take place, you know, right in front of you like that. So I really enjoyed that process and the teaching aspect of it, you know, kind of sharing what I had learned along the way and just teaching these young kids, you know, how to become, you know, basketball players and young men.
Early in your career, where did you go for education in terms of becoming a better coach? Were you talking to your coaching mentors? Were you talking to your head coach, as you mentioned? Are you reading? Are you watching film? Where are you going to improve your craft as a coach early on in your career?
I think the biggest influence when I was a young coach was again, the head coach at La Jolla High, Kamal Asaf. You know, I spent a lot of hours, pretty much every single practice with the varsity squad, sometimes playing against them, you know, a lot of open gyms, but he was just such a good teacher and, you know, you could bounce any idea off of him and, you know, he was open to listen. But you know, he was just a great teacher of the game. He had some great coaching mentors as well that, I had access to through him. And, you know, I was just able to soak up a lot, you know, in my early 20s and just really learn how to run a program, how to treat people, you know, how to coach kids. You know, he just had a way about getting kids' attention and teaching. And so I really learned a lot during those first few years of how to run a program. And, you know, I think that's so important, you know, when you're getting your start, to be with someone that's good. You know, it can go either way. And, you know, I know you can learn from some mistakes, but it's a lot easier to learn from a guy who's, you know, really teaching the game at a high level and having some success. So, you know, I got to see that program kind of get built from the ground up. You know, we weren't very good our first couple of years. And in the last few years, we won CIF championships. And so that was just great to be a part of and see that process unfold.
What's something that, when you think back to that time, that you've taken with you that's still part of your coaching today?
You know, I was just amazed at, you know, some of the patience Coach Asaf would have at certain times, you know, a lot of mistakes being made, you know, the process to develop a program and get to a high level, it's slow. And, you know, he probably had a lot more patience than I did with it. And so watching him be patient and just kind of watching things take place and, you know, how he handled that. That's something I've always taken with me to, you know, don't cheat it. Don't rush. You know, there's a order, kind of how things have to happen. And he was just so good at that. And that's something I've always taken with me to, you know, believe in your system, teach your system, be patient with kids, let them make mistakes, and, you know, just treat them good. You know, I've never understood the yelling, screaming, you know, that whole technique. I know it works sometimes, but, you know, the young kids, they're not trying to make these mistakes. And they have to be patient with them and just keep teaching them, keep coaching them.
I think that's a great point. It's certainly a way that the coaching profession has changed. You think back to what the model was of a great coach in, let's say, the 70s and 80s. You had this model of sort of the Bobby Knight school of you got to be hard-nosed and you got to yell and it's kind of my way or the highway. And clearly the coaching profession has evolved for the better. And you think about how much more you can get out of your athletes when you are motivating them with love as opposed to fear. And it's been, I think, one of the things that's been such a positive for the coaching profession is that evolution where coaches and people realize that you don't have to beat your athletes down in order to be able to get the most of them and get the most out of them. And I think that's exactly, you know, what you were able to see earlier in your career. And then obviously that has a big influence on the way you coach moving forward. After La Jolla, you get an opportunity to take over and become a head coach. Talk a little bit about how that experience, how that opportunity came to you, and then how prepared or unprepared you were when you first sat down in that head coach's chair.
My first head coaching experience, I think I was about 27 years old at the time. And, you know, going into that, I thought I knew it all, you know, as we all do at some point when we were young coaches. But, you know, I took over a program that I guess the best way to say it, it had a glorified intramural program before that, not very competitive. The school, it wasn't a big focus. Athletics weren't, you know, that important on campus. And I knew that going into taking the job, you know, but a new athletic director had just came in. He came from a school that had a lot of success. And so I felt like, you know, hey, it's a school with, you know, not a lot of tradition, not a lot of history with basketball. And, you know, I liked that challenge of kind of starting something new, something fresh. And I did think there was a lot of potential. His name of the school is San Diego Academy. And so, you know, I thought it was a great opportunity for me. Had no clue what I was doing that first year. Just kind of, you know, went by what I had learned before, you know, from my coaching mentors, and tried to instill that and build a program from the ground up. But, you know, those first few years was when the patience really was tested. you know, I think we had all of 5 wins, maybe my first year, and I believe 3 of them were against the same team. So good scheduling, but, you know, it was definitely challenging. And, you know, you start to question, you know, the things that you really believed in before. You know, it's like, man, we were winning CIF championships before and, you know, running a similar style, a similar program, and now we can't win a game. So, you know, the patience was definitely tested, not only with the losing, but also just challenging your beliefs as a coach, you know, what you believe in, you know, the values you want to instill in your program. You know, it's hard to see that end game when you're losing. You know, we were fortunate. And, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of as a coach is what we built at that San Diego over those 4 years there. So, you know, it was tough. And, you know, I think one of the key things for me was, you know, just keeping an open mind and just knowing as a young coach, I don't know everything. You know, I think that's a big mistake a lot of young coaches make is, you know, you want to be confident in yourself. You want to, you know, command the gym and those are all great things, but at the same time, and you have to know, you know, we all have a lot to learn. You know, you can learn anything from anybody. You can learn from a fifth grade soccer coach, just, you know, anything. So, you know, taking that approach, I think was key for me kind of maturing as a coach and just, constantly trying to soak up new ideas and find any way to improve our program.
At what point during your tenure there, do you feel like you had things turned around, if that makes any sense? Was there an aha moment where something happened? You're like, oh, we get it now. Or, oh, I think we got this thing going in the right direction. Or was it more of a gradual type of process? Obviously it was gradual, but was there a moment where you're sitting on the bench and all of a sudden something happened? You're like, wow, we get it.
The thing that popped in my head when you're asking that question was, I believe it was the start of the first game of my third year. You know, we had a good, solid group of young players. Several of them went on to play college. One of them still playing professionally right now in Europe, but had a great group of, I think it was sophomores and juniors that year. And our first game was against La Jolla High, my old mentor, Coach Asaf. And, you know, he'd still had a strong program. They were still winning games. And we went into their gym first game of the year and just put it on them. And that was such a great feeling to, you know, go in there and kind of, you know, beat a program that was well respected. And, you know, at that moment, I kind of felt like, you know, all right, the tide is turning. We can go out and compete now. And, you know, our program is definitely moving in the right direction. So that was confirmation for me. It was that first game of my third year.
Yeah, it's fun to see things actually get to what you envision when you first take the job. And obviously, as you said, it takes a while. And I think that's one of the challenges that coaches face, right? When you take over a program that's losing, to me, one of the biggest challenges is how do you continue to sell your program, your philosophy, the things that you're doing when the wins aren't coming. So when you remember back to that, those early years where maybe you didn't win as much as you wanted to, how did you keep the faith of the players, the families, the AD, the school community? What were some things that you tried to do to continue to help them to maintain faith in you and your program? Because I know it's easy to do when you're winning. It's harder to do when you're losing. So how do you go about doing that, getting people to still believe, even though maybe the results on the scoreboard aren't showing that you're moving in the right direction, but you know internally that you are because of the things that you're seeing every day in your program and in your practices?
There's a couple things. I think number one is just being honest with your long-term vision for your program and for each individual kid, you know? So, you know, there's an individual aspect of it where, you know, the kids want to see improvement individually too. And, you know, you got to put that sweat equity into getting the gym, work with kids individually, put that individual skill work in. And, you know, from a team perspective, you know, we might not have won a lot of games, but the improvement was obvious where, you know, we were competing against bigger schools that, you know, we would have never even been able to compete with in previous years. So, you know, we were shortening that gap, no doubt. I think the kids, the parents all saw that. They saw what was on the horizon with our youth. We were a young team. In because, you know, we put that time in just to, you know, development wise. And, you know, I think when kids know, hey, I'm getting better, our team's getting better, you know, it was an easy sell. I don't want to say easy, but we could definitely see it. It was obvious that, you know, it was going the right way. And time was just crucial for that. You know, we spent so much time in the gym together. We were fortunate to, it was a medium-sized school in California, but we didn't have a football program. And, you know, we had a lot of our kids committed, you know, all summer long to basketball. And so we were really able to make a lot of gains. You know, a lot of those kids just really developed most. And I think everybody saw that.
I think that when you can point to that internal improvement and you can see where your players are getting better and they feel it and they know the amount of time that you're putting in, I think that's when you really can start to find that success. When you think about what you did as a head coach in that first experience, what's something that when you look back on it, when you first started as a head coach to where you are now, and obviously we're going to get into some of the other experiences you had at the college level and the pro level, but just when you think about where you are as a head coach today versus where you were when you first took the job, can you point to one or two things? And I'm sure the answer is probably, well, everything. But if you can point to one or two things that you think you really improved upon over the course of your career that, boy, I'm a much better head coach, or I'm a much better coach in this particular area compared to when I first started, what would those areas be?
Like you said, it's everything. But, you know, if I had to pinpoint a few things, just from an X's and O's standpoint, I think, you know, the MBA just gave me a doctoral degree in the game of basketball. You know, that was just such a great experience to learn from just outstanding coaches. And so, you know, I know just looking back at some of the things we did back then and kind of my understanding of, you know, different actions we ran, you know, during those early high school coaching years. You know, it's almost kind of funny. You know, I thought I understood, but, you know, I didn't yet. Not to say what we did was wrong, but I just think I have a much better understanding now of, you know, how to design an offense, how to fit your offense to your talent. And the same thing defensively. You know, I just think both sides of the ball, the attention to detail now has grown from where it was back then. And again, that's just from my NBA experiences and just learning from some of those coaches at that level. So yeah, the X's and O's would be the biggest part. And I think the second thing is just understanding too, as a coach, that, you know, there's a million different ways to win basketball games. You know, you can win games playing a 2-3 zone. You can win championships playing a 2-3 zone. You can win games and championships running a pack line. You know, there's a lot of different ways to win. And, you know, understanding that. And, you know, I think when I was a young coach, I was almost a little arrogant about, you know, our system. And, you know, we had pride in what we did. And I think that was a good thing. But it was almost like, you know, if anybody did anything different than what we did, to me, it was like, oh, that's wrong, you know. And maturing as a coach is learning, man, there's a lot of ways that people can beat you. And, you know, I've definitely came a long way with that. I think there's a few things in every program that, you know, that are winning characteristics. But overall, I mean, we've all seen it, man. You can win games doing a lot of different things.
Yeah, experience is a great teacher. And I think this is something that I've said on the podcast numerous times, but I think back to myself as a young coach and basically everything that I did or knew, I took from the coaches that I had played for. And I played for one high school coach and one college coach. And so when I first got the opportunity to be a head JV coach, and I kind of had, you know, semi-control over my little team, and we basically just did everything that I had done as a player. And being an egotistical young guy, just like you described earlier, like, I thought I knew everything. And you look back on it now, you're like, man, I knew nothing. And I wish I would have taken, I wish I would have taken some more time to educate myself and really go out and take more advantage of learning the game. But I just, at that point, I think my ego was still in the way and just felt like, hey, I did all these things as a player, and that's good enough to make me a good coach. And the older you get, obviously, the more you realize that you know very, very little. And you also realize what a disservice you did to kids that you coached earlier in your career, where you just didn't put the time in. So you obviously had a really good experience there as a head coach for the first time at San Dieguito. So you get an opportunity. Anybody who's looking at your bio is going to go, now, wait, hold on. This guy was an assistant coach at the high school level. Then he gets a head coaching job at the high school level. And then the next thing on his bio is he's working for the Orlando Magic. So how does that take place? Tell us the story of how you get connected to Orlando, and then we'll dive into what your experience was like in the NBA.
Yeah, it's a story of right place, right time, I guess you could say. And, you know, a lot of coaching opportunities are just that, you know, being in the right place at the right time. Because there were so many people that were just obviously – more deserving probably of that job than I was. But, you know, the NBA had just got done with that lockout season. And, you know, back I was a little younger, I could still play a little bit. And so got to know a lot of NBA guys that spent their off seasons out in San Diego, Chase Budinger, Kawhi Leonard, and a few other guys. And so we had some great open gyms, open runs in our gym there at San Dieguito during some off seasons there where, man, I think back on it now and it was just amazing. You know, we had Klay Thompson in there, Deron Williams, you know, there'd be 6-7, you know, bona fide NBA guys on the floor all at once. And so it was a lot of fun, but I got to know Kawhi Leonard a little bit. He had asked me if I would host his youth basketball camp there in our gym at San Dieguito. And, you know, that was a no-brainer. We did that. And it was a five-day camp, I believe. And during that time, one of the assistant coaches from the San Antonio Spurs, Chip England, he was in town. And he was there at the camp the whole time. You know, he would work with Kawhi before and after the camp. So, you know, I got to watch that. But, And I got to develop a relationship with Coach England, the assistant coach with the Spurs. We talked a lot, and he kind of got to see during that week how I ran my program, ran the camp, and we just kind of developed the relationship. And, you know, at the end of the camp, you know, we talked about maybe an opportunity for an unpaid internship with their G League team. And, you know, as a high school coach who would never dream of, you know, coaching at that level, you know, I was all in. I said, absolutely. And I would love to do it. What do I have to do? I'll be there. Tell me when. Tell me, you know, what I have to do. And so a little bit of time passed and, you know, nothing more of that opportunity is really talked about. And so, you know, I was a little bummed out, but, you know, it's the way things go sometimes. And, you know, there's probably a month or two that had passed since the last conversation. And I'll never forget, I was in the shower one evening in my little apartment in San Diego, and get out and I have a weird phone number that had called me with a message. And I listened to the message, and it's Jock Vaughn, head coach of the Orlando Magic. He'd just been named the head coach several weeks before. And, Jock previously was an assistant coach with the San Antonio Spurs. And, you know, for anybody who's been in the NBA circle, Coach England, who I had got to know, is just so well respected. He's just such a great coach, just a kind man who's always looking to help people. He's generous, you know, trying to give other young coaches opportunities. And so when Jock got that job, you know, he talked to Coach England, and Coach England said, hey, I met a young guy out in San Diego. You might want to talk to him about having him come on to your staff. So I listened to the message, immediately called Coach Vaughn back. You know, my heart rate was probably double what it is right now. And, you know, we had a full on, I want to say, hour and a half, 2 hour phone conversation, just about a lot of different things. And, you know, the next thing I know, I think it was 24 hours later, I'm on a first class flight to Orlando, and, you know, never flown on a first class flight in my life. It was just kind of all a whirlwind at that point. But, you know, I got some feedback from some other guys who had coached at the NBA level. Eric Musselman I knew him a little bit from his ties in San Diego. So I gave him a call and just got some good advice from him on, you know, what prep work do I need to do going into this? And, you know, my coaching mentor, Coach Asaf, had given me some good advice on, you know, what to expect. And so flew to Orlando and, you know, got in, spent a whole day there in the practice facility. And, you know, the big thing that was a bit of a curveball, but, you know, I was definitely prepared for it, was I went in and I ran a full workout with a group of young guys. And it's kind of a mix of, you know, guys that were NBA vets kind of looking to get in and get back in. And then some young guys who, you know, were just drafted. So it was a group of hungry guys, you know, looking to find their way into the league. And I think that was great because, you know, they didn't know who the heck I was. And, you know, they went hard. The workouts went really well. You know, the conversations with the general manager, Coach Vaughn, it just clicked. And so, you know, flew back, waited, had a few more phone conversations. And, you know, that was probably the longest 3 or 4 weeks of my life, just waiting, you know, to hear one way or the other.
Right,
you know, is this going to happen or is it going to be a heartbreaker? And, you know, finally I got that call from Coach Vaughn and he asked me if I was ready. And I couldn't believe it, just in shock to go from, you know, coaching a bunch of, you know, high school knuckleheads to, you know, shortly after being on the floor with, you know, JJ Redick and Jameer Nelson. And, you know, it was just, you know, a crazy, crazy story. And again, just so lucky to have that opportunity that, you know, like I said, a lot of coaches are probably more deserving.
Right place, right time. As you said, I'm sure you had some self-doubt as you went into it. Cause I think about an experience that if I was put in that position, or I think if anybody was put in that position, you'd probably think to yourself what you just said out loud, right? I'm just coaching some high school knuckleheads, and now here I am out there on the floor with the very best players in the world. When you went into that, how did you go about and think about preparing yourself to make sure that you were at your best so that you could provide what the Magic was looking for? What did you do in the intervening moments from when you thought it was a possibility you're going to get the job to, as you're getting started, what did you do to make sure, hey, I have to be as prepared as possible? What were some of the things that you did?
Biggest thing that, you know, alleviated some of that pressure was, you know, Coach Vaughn was just so honest with me about, hey, I know what you don't know. And, you know, he just gave me the confidence then to be like, okay, that's okay. I don't need to know everything yet. And, you know, I just think he saw, you know, potential in me to learn that, you know, to learn the NBA game. And, you know, I think he just liked the way I taught the game and approached the, you know, the skill development part of it. And so he was so good with me, just giving me the confidence to, you know, hey, you belong here. We know what you don't know and you'll learn it along the way. So that was a big part of it. But asking a lot of questions, you know, I think back to our staff, you know, those first few years there, just a tremendous staff of coaches who went on to have great success. So James Borrego, who did a great job with the Charlotte Hornets here the last few years. He was on our staff. Wes Unseld Jr., who's, you know, now the head coach in Washington. Just unbelievable coaches and just so willing to share a game with me and teach me what they had learned because they'd been around that NBA game for so long. And so, you know, just being able to sit with them hours on hours, you know, a lot of flights, just sitting next to those guys, watching game film and learning from them. You know, I would say, you know, it was a process. The game, I can remember watching the first few practices and first few preseason games that first year, and it just moved so fast. And, you know, that took a long time to get used to. You know, slowly the game slows down, just kind of like it does, you know, as a player. You know, it moves fast at first, especially when you bump up levels. But the more you see it, the more you play the game, it eventually slows down for you. And it did. And, you know, a lot of that was just learning from those guys.
Describe your role. What was it that you did? What was the discussion like, the conversations when you were given your responsibilities?
Yeah, and that's something I'm just so grateful that, you know, I was with Coach Vaughn. He threw me right into the fire. I remember our first practice in training camp. We're sitting in our coaches meeting, and, you know, he looks at me and says, Coach, you know, you got our pin down defense today. Take the guys through it. And so, you know, him having that confidence in me was just was big, you know. But they just kind of lined up, and you know, having the guys that just were very patient with me and were able to it's big.
When you think about the opportunity to work with NBA players and what makes them so special in terms of their ability to succeed at the highest levels. Obviously, there's a level of physical tools that a player needs to have to be able to play at that level, and there's a certain skill set. But there's things, I think, that go beyond that. So when you think about the opportunity to work with those guys that you had a chance to get out on the court and actually coach, what sets them apart from a player who doesn't make it in the NBA? Or I'm sure you worked with players who tried to compete and couldn't stay at that level. So just what's from an intangible mental side of the game, what sets apart an NBA player from an average college player who maybe can't make it in the NBA?
Two things. And I think the biggest thing, and I would talk to my college guys about this all the time, I think the guys that make it in the league that aren't superstars, they understand the role. You know, not everybody has to go out and be a superstar, you know, but you have to have a tool that gets you on a roster and is valuable to that team. And I think that's a lot of mistake. A lot of young players at that level, they make the mistake to think, well, I have to go out here and do everything. You know, I have to be a great rebounder, a great 3-point shooter. I have to do this, that. You don't, you know, we have very specific roles we need filled. And, you know, if you're just kind of average at everything, it's going to be tough to find your way onto an NBA roster. Whereas, man, if you can go shoot 40% from the 3-point line, or, you know, you can guard at an elite level, or you can rebound at an elite level, we don't need you to do everything. We need you to fill a role. And, you know, so it's tough for a lot of young guys coming out of college where maybe they did do everything for their college team to make that transition to, okay, now I'm a role player here and I have to be great at this role. And the guys that stick, they get that early. They thrive at it. They accept it. They take pride in it. And, you know, I think that's true at every level, whether it be a JV kid moving up to varsity basketball in high school, your role's not going to be the same, you know, or a high school kid moving on to college. You know, very few guys' roles are going to remain the same as it was at that lower level. So you have to adjust. You have to be able to and willing to accept that role and be great at it. So, you know, that was one big thing that I think made certain guys stick in the league, because believe me, I saw a lot of talented guys come through our training camps, our mini camps, and the guys that made it weren't always the most talented. They weren't always the most physically gifted, but they understood a role. And then, you know, the other thing that was just so incredible about NBA players is just, you know, the slim margin of error that there is when you're guarding some of these guys. You know, you're coaching high school kids and, hey, you tell a guy, you got to go over this screen with this kid. He's a great shooter. And maybe they do, maybe they don't. You know, sometimes the kid will make the pay. But, you know, as long as you play hard, we'll be okay. You know, well, at that NBA level, you know, not only do you have to go over the screen, but you have to do it with great technique. You have to, you know, be great at it, or else you're going to get scored on. And so, you know, seeing that at that level, it was just, you know, amazing to watch how good those guys were, how if you make a mistake, the ball's going in the bucket. And that just, you know, that's one of the big things that improves you as a coach is, you know, you're going to get tested. And, you know, you really have to have that attention to detail at that level, where, because the guys will make you pay. And it really makes you think about, you know, okay, what are we doing here? How can we improve it? And it, you know, just gets down to these little nuances where you tweak them and, you know, it might only help you 1 or 2%, but, you know, sometimes that's the difference. And so, yeah, that margin for error, offensively and defensively at that level, is just so small.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
It's really interesting that you mentioned about the role player piece of it and just making sure that you understand your role and having one or two elite skills. We talked to Lyle Wolf last week. He's an assistant at Texas A&M, and he brought in something that we've talked about it a little bit before. We had Mike Procopio on, who was with the Mavs, and I'm sure you know who Mike is, but he talked a lot about how you have to dominate simple is his mantra, and that he said the same thing that you did, that basically in the NBA you have 20 guys or 30 guys, one guy per team maybe, that kind of gets to do what they want to do and gets as many shots as they want to get, and then everybody else has to be good at one or two things. They have to make sure that they're fulfilling whatever their role is. And but what Lyle talked about, which I thought was interesting, and I think it kind of speaks to your experience, especially when you go down to the younger levels of the game, right? And you see kids working out with trainers, or they're working on their game. They're kind of working on everything, and most everything that they do is with the ball and playing one-on-one and the, you know, the dribble moves and the shooting and all those things that everybody likes to play. And they're trying to develop and become an all-around player, and rightfully so. But as you move up in levels, as you said, the kid who's going from JV to varsity or the kid who's going from varsity to college, you're probably not going to be that guy who's going to have the ball in their hands orchestrating everything all the time. And what becomes important, and you said it at the NBA level, that you have to be really, really good at one or two things, and your team needs you to play that role, and you need to be able to execute that role perfectly or as close to perfectly as you possibly can. And if you can't accept that, then it becomes a lot more difficult for you to be able to stick in the league or to be able to find a role on your college team or your high school team or whatever it is. And yet I think so oftentimes the mentality, especially again, as you're younger, everybody's working on all aspects of their game to try and improve it. And you would think that it would make sense for that to continue. But yet if you go up the ladder and you think about NBA players, it doesn't make sense for every guy on the team to be working to try to emulate the skills that Steph Curry has, or try to play like LeBron, or try to play like Kawhi. And because you're going to be a lesser version of those guys no matter what you do. And so, yeah, to your point, you have to find your role. And I think that it's something that a lot of times players, especially, they don't think about that as they're transitioning from one level of the game to the next. And I think it's important for coaches at all levels to help players to understand that even if you're a role player, your role can be very, very important. And that communication piece, I would guess, on the NBA level is really important as well.
You know, kind of piggybacking on what you were saying there too, I think, you know, another big mistake that a lot of guys make at all levels is, you know, they hear what they can't do all the time. You know, you have this great college player, but, you know, he could shoot the ball on the perimeter or whatever it might be. And so these guys would come into, you know, these workouts and they would try so hard to prove, hey, I can do this. And, you know, I heard veteran NBA coaches all the time take these young guys aside and say, buddy, you know, we didn't bring you here to watch you shoot threes. You know, we know that's not what you do.
Right.
Do what got you here. You know, be great. Be you. And, you know, these guys say, well, you can't do this, can't do that. They want to prove so bad that they can do it. And they end up losing, you know, kind of losing their identity as a basketball coach and, as a basketball player. And, you know, be you. Definitely.
That's hard though, right? I mean, as a player, you think about what you've done your whole career. Look, if you're good enough to be in the NBA at some point, and who knows when that point was, but at some point you were probably the guy. Now there are some exceptions to players who maybe if you're a big guy and you know, you didn't have the ball in your hands all the time, but certainly most players, if you're good enough to be even entertaining an opportunity to play in the NBA, you were probably the guy at some point. And so to be able to tamp down your ego, to understand that, look, yeah, there are some things that I can't do, but here's what I'm really good at. I've got to double down on those. I can see where if you're not in the right frame of mind and it's not communicated to you in the right way, and you don't have the right team of people around you that are telling you the right things, that I can see where that can go. That can go south in a hurry, and maybe not be players not being as receptive to that as they should be if they want to stick around.
You know, that's where the coaching aspect of it is so important. You know, we have to, as coaches, find those roles for the players and, you know, show them, hey, here's where you fit in. Here's where you help us. And, you know, get them to buy into that role no matter what it is. And I think, you know, the teams and the players that have the success, you know, you have the majority of your guys, if not all of them, you know, buying into that. And, you know, it might not be the role they wanted. And that's fine. You know, it's great to have, you know, to want more of a role, you know, to have more responsibilities on your team. But, you know, as a coach, hey, here's where you're at now. And, you know, here's how you can get there. Here's how we can give you more of a role. But this is what we need you to do now. And, you know, I think if you don't do that as a coach, eventually somewhere along the way, you know, you're going to butt heads with that player, and it's going to cause more problems. If, you know, if you push that down the line, it's better to address it right away and, you know, get that buy-in early.
Yeah. I think that early communication and being proactive, I think you can talk about that in pretty much any situation in life, right? As a teacher, it's much better to have proactive communication and build a relationship with a parent before you have problems with the kid. Same thing when you're talking about coaching at the high school level. I'm sure that you've had plenty of conversations with parents where it's good if you have a positive relationship with the parent. And then if there is something that arises along the way with playing time or whatever, if you've already established a good line of communication, it makes those more difficult conversations along the, you know, along the road come a little bit easier. And same thing with a coach and player, I'm sure at the NBA level, if you're talking to that player and you're helping them to understand where they are right from the get-go, they're going to be more accepting, or you're going to know right away that they're not going to accept it. And then you can figure out what to do with that relationship. But you have to be honest. I think that brutal honesty is something that's a theme that has come through the podcast over and over and over again, talking to coaches that, look, what players want from you is they don't want you to sugarcoat it. They want you to tell them the truth. And you get in trouble when you don't tell the truth, because eventually the truth is going to play itself out. If the coach doesn't think you're good enough, well, guess what? You're probably not going to play. But if they keep stringing you along and say, yeah, you're doing great, you're doing this, you're doing this, but then you're still not getting in the game, players start not to trust their coaching staff. And that's when you, I think, as a coach, get in trouble when you don't have that proactive communication. It's just, it's so important. When you are there in Orlando, was there one particular coach that had some experience that when you get down there on staff, that kind of took you under their wing and that sort of looked out for you in those, you know, in your early months there? And who did you develop the closest relationship with?
Closest relationship I had was with Coach Borrego. You know, we were both had a background. We both lived in San Diego. Coach Borrego had you know, coached and played at USD. So we knew a lot of the same people. You know, we had a lot of, you know, familiar things to talk about. And he was just so, so good to me, taking me under his wing. And, you know, many flights sitting next to him, just breaking down game film of him, you know, pointing out to me, you know, why I'm on the court. And, you know, he was just so good with his time and treated me so well. So, you know, he spent a lot of time with me, and he was so good to me. And another guy was LaRon Prophet. He was also, you know, assistant on our staff, did a lot of player development, and, you know, he had a different experience. You know, he was a former NBA player, you know, and played with, and he was incredible. He had the opportunity to play with Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. And so hearing those stories and being able to talk to him and see it from a player perspective, you know, because that's something as a coach, when you don't have that NBA background as a player, you know, it's hard. It's hard to establish relationships as player with the players. It's hard to gain their respect. And so the more things you can soak up from a guy that's been there, that's played in big games, that's played with some of the greats, and was an elite player, you know, you're better off as a coach. So, you know, it's great to talk to him and just learn from him from more of a player's perspective of, you know, what the guys are going through, because he's lived that, you know, he's been through that as a player.
What's something that he shared with you that benefited you as a coach from a player perspective, when you think about what you may have overlooked or what the staff may overlook that he was able to bring to the table? And obviously Coach Vaughn was a former player as well, but just what do you think that player perspective, what are some things that maybe they bring to the table that a coach who hasn't played maybe just might not be aware of, something that you remember him telling you that you were like, oh yeah, maybe that does make sense, and we hadn't thought of it that way?
You know, a couple things. I think the first thing is, you know, how many different ways each player is pulled, you know, how many different directions, how many people have their hands on every player in the NBA. You know, they have an agent there, they have family, you know, like a wife or a girlfriend. And, you know, at the high school level, you know, every player, they might have a family member or whatever, but they don't have agents. They don't have alumni of the college they went to. They don't have a fan, you know, that's rooting for them necessarily. And so these guys are getting pulled a lot of different directions. And, you know, as a coach, you know, you have to be able to, you know, to sift through that and be able to, you know, make things make sense to the player and get them to buy in, you know, to a team perspective. And so, you know, not having not played at that level, and, you know, listening to him talk about, you know, where the guys' heads might be after a certain road trip, or, you know, just different things he had lived as a player. I remember one time we were playing in Toronto, and it was a 2:00 game. And, you know, that was kind of a tradition. You know, you play on the weekend, I believe it was a Sunday, It's always an early game in Toronto. And, you know, he warned me. He's like, yeah, guys better be ready to play. You know, I hope people weren't out having, you know, too fun of a night in Toronto on Saturday night. And boy, sure enough, he was right. You know, he knew exactly what he's talking about from that perspective, because we did not play well that next day. But, you know, he just gave so much good insight on, you know, what the players emotionally are going through, what their bodies are going through. You know, as a coach, you know, man, I would be tired sometimes being on the floor working out with the guys. But, you know, you have no idea the miles on their legs, you know, the demand that their bodies have, you know, with, you know, playing heavy minutes for some guys, working out, you know, as much as they do. As a coach, sometimes you kind of lose track of, you know, this guy might need a break, or we might need to cut this guy's workout down. And, you know, having been there, he was able to give great perspective on that.
I wish my college coach would have thought about that.
Yeah. But that's another way the game has evolved too, is, you know, I think as coaches now, we realize that, you know, man, if you don't have it by mid season or late season, there's no point in having a 3-hour practice. We ain't getting it. So yeah, you're better off being fresh at that point than having that 3-hour practice.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's funny because, I mean, I think about that to some degree as a player, but when I was early in my career, when I was first teaching and I was an assistant varsity coach, and at the time our staff was all young and most of us were single, and we'd have these practices, and this is with high school kids, and there'd be times, you know, we'd start practice at 2:30 and we'd get done at like 6 o'clock, and you think, we were practicing for 3.5 hours with high school kids. Like what could we have possibly have been getting out of them in that last half hour of a 3.5 hour practice? It's just, I mean, it's crazy when you think back on sort of the way that we used to do things, and you think about the NBA and just how advanced they've become in the league with the number of people that are monitoring, again, recovery and just where they're at, and how important it's become for players to be able to have rest and the whole load management piece and all that stuff. But when you were there, how difficult is it during the season to not be able to practice in between games? Obviously you're doing a lot of film work, but just what's it like to play all those games and not practice?
That was something that was, you know, just totally new to me, because, you know, at the high school level, even at the college level, you know, you're playing once, twice a week, and, you know, you're able to get one or two good practices in each week. You know, at the NBA level, you know, you're lucky if you get one light practice and a couple walkthroughs in. So a lot of your teaching is done just, you know, differently. It's done, you know, with video. It's done with, you know, just some individual work on the court, you know, especially with those younger players. And, you know, it's really difficult for your young guys that are out of the rotation, especially, you know, mid, late season, and not getting those minutes. But, you know, those are guys that still need to develop. So, you know, you have to recreate game situations. They still have to be learning. They still have to be getting those game-like reps in order to develop. So, you know, in the next few years, you know, they're in that rotation. You know, they're working their way up. So, you know, you have to learn. And you have to learn how to teach, how to keep that progression going, even though, you know, the practice time is not going to be there. You know, video is really your best tool for that.
What's your favorite practice moment from your time with the Magic?
Tough one. One memory that, you know, I'll have with me for the rest of my life was, we were in, I believe it was Portland, and, you know, tough road trip, not winning much. And so, you know, we go into Portland, it's a shoot around that morning. And, you know, we kind of had a routine. We go in, watch some clips, you know, of what we're going to see that night with Portland. And we get out on the floor, you know, shoot the ball a little bit, go through some things. So that's totally what I was expecting. The video guys get the screen ready there in the locker room. Coach Vaughn's there ready to go over, you know, the clips. And all of a sudden I see highlights of me as a little guy running around out there. And little did I know, somebody went behind my back and found some old video footage of of me as a young guy playing, and they put it up there. And so it's just a way to kind of break up the monotony and get guys to loosen up a little bit. And we did that with several guys along the way. But I'll never forget that. And that's a fun memory that'll stick with me.
Was there a particular player during your era there that you felt like you really connected with, and somebody that you're still in touch with today?
Etwan Moore was one of my favorite guys I've ever coached, and I spent so much time with him. And just got to see him develop, from a guy that was, out of the rotation. We picked him up as kind of a free agent from Boston, and he was just looking for an opportunity. And, Etwan just worked his butt off, just spent countless hours in the gym. He, like we talked about earlier, he was a guy that wasn't the most talented, talented guy, no doubt, but a lot of guys that have went in and out of NBA gyms that were more physically gifted than Etwan, but he knew a role, he accepted a role, and he was great in it. And so, really had a great connection with him. We spent a lot of time in the gym together. He was receptive to the things we taught and worked on and bought into that role. And, he had a long NBA career, made a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a really good example, as you said, of a guy that you just figure it out. And if you can figure it out and you're a guy who's a team first guy and you can play your role and you can be someone who's a positive member of the team, like guys, staffs don't want guys who are headaches who are going to be guys 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. You want guys who are good team guys who are going to work and put in the time. And I think there's a good lesson there for players at all levels of the game, right? If you want to be a part of it, you got to put in the work. You got to be a positive team player. And if you can do those things, then you got a chance to stick around and be a part of something special, which obviously he was able to do at various stops along his career. As you look back on your time with the Magic and you think about that experience with NBA basketball, what's your fondest recollection as a coach when you think about what you learned from that experience that's made you a better coach in your next few stops, which we're going to talk about on the college level and then eventually back to high school?
I think it's the biggest thing is just, the relationships and how you form those bonds with your players. Because again, there's a million different ways to win basketball games, but I know one thing, if you don't have the buy-in, if you don't have strong relationships with your players, I don't care what you do, you're not winning consistently. So, learning from Coach Vaughn, he was just so great at establishing those relationships, being truthful with guys, like we talked about earlier, defining roles clearly for people. Those were all great things to learn at that level. And, you just learn it, I think, quicker at that level because, again, the margin for error and how competitive that level is, it's going to speed that process up. You're just able to learn at a really high level.
When you leave the Magic and you go to the college level and you go to Cameron, talk a little bit about that transition and why you made that move to go to college basketball. Obviously, now you've been at the high school level, you've been at the pro level, now you're going to go and coach at the college level. So just talk a little bit about that transition from Orlando to Cameron.
At that point, I kind of started to see, where my strengths were as a coach. And, I knew at that point I want to be a head coach at the college level or at the pro level. But, there's only a handful of those jobs at the pro level. They're hard to get. And so, I knew my path forward was going to be as a head coach and probably at the college level. And the other big part of it was, I met my future wife. Wasn't my wife yet while I was in Orlando, but that the family aspect of it, played a huge role where, it's hard to start a family and start your NBA career or invest the time that it's going to take to be a head coach someday. I think it's a lot easier if you've established a family, maybe your kids are a little older, It's tough, you know, when you don't have that yet. And, you know, you're going to have to put those hours in to get to that level. Not impossible, but, you know, it's really hard. And so, you know, I knew my path forward was going to be as a college coach. And, you know, I think kind of like we talked about earlier with players accepting their roles, you know, I think that's something that's important as coaches too, to understand is, you know, being a head coach and being an assistant coach are just, they're totally different. And, you know, as a coach, we all have different strengths. We all have different weaknesses. And, you know, there's guys that are just built to be assistant coaches. They're great at it. And, you know, they know where they fit in. They know that, you know, it maybe is not as a head coach. And then there's other guys that, you know, they're just born to be head coaches. They're born to be leaders. And, you know, it's so understanding, you know, where your strengths lie as a coach. And, you know, I just kind of felt that, you know, that's where my future lie. That's where my strengths were, you know, just from a teaching aspect. You know, I love teaching the game, and I love teaching my, you know, my style. You know, it's hard to teach someone else's style or someone else's philosophy with conviction. And, you know, it was easy for me to teach my style with conviction. It's hard to do that, you know, when you're learning, you know, especially at a new level, at the NBA level. So, you know, I knew I wanted to be head coach, and I knew my path forward just made more sense at the college level.
When you make that transition from the pro game back to the college game, what was it like in terms of, you're looking at obviously a different level of player? Was that an easy adjustment, a hard adjustment, something that it didn't take very long for you to get adapted back? Just what was it like to go from coaching obviously the best players in the world to coaching college players who were still obviously very skilled, but not at the level of NBA? Just talk a little bit about what that was like.
It was one of the toughest transitions I've made, believe it or not. You know, it was just as difficult as the jump from high school to the NBA, because, you know, it's you want to coach, you know, you have all these ideas flowing through your head, and, you know, it's really easy to overcomplicate things. And, you know, that's exactly what happened. And, you know, I found over the years, you know, the more we're able to simplify things, you know, just the better we get, the better our players are, the more freely they play, the more fun we have, and the wins just follow. And, you know, that was something I had to learn was, you know, you have to dial it back. And, you know, you have to understand that it's not what I as the coach can understand. It's not about me looking smart and, you know, look at this complicated, you know, system we're running here on both ends of the floor. You know, it's about what your players can comprehend. And, you know, obviously these college players, they don't have the experience that these NBA guys have. They haven't played the games. They haven't, you know, had the same experiences. And so, you know, you can look pretty foolish as a coach when you go out there and try to, you know, put all these different things in and you just overcomplicate it. So, you know, dialing it back each and every year from everything, from what we do on the floor, how we run our practices, to even just the scouting reports, you know, that was something at the NBA level. You know, these scouting reports were, you know, very detailed, and, you know, and why they should be, you know, those guys, it's their job. It's our job as coaches to have them prepared. And, you know, it's 100% basketball all the time, but, you know, at the college level, guys are going to class, you know, and, you know, it's basketball 10% of the time. And so, you know, you really have to scale that back as well, you know, where we're not able to put a half a page on, you know, the eighth guy, you know, coming off their bench. You know, that's not going to help us win. You know, we're going to have to simplify this and make it easy to understand, but still, you know, be organized.
In your time as an assistant coach, what did you learn about putting together the right staff so that when you got the opportunity to become the head coach at Lincoln Trail after a season at Cameron, what did you learn about assistant coaches and what you were looking for in an assistant coach when you put together your own staff?
The biggest thing you have to take into consideration is you have to know, you know, where your weaknesses and where your strengths are as a coach. Because, you know, if you hire a clone of yourself, you know, maybe my strength is, you know, I'm a great teacher on the floor. You know, I can really, you know, get a lot out of a practice. And, you know, I go out and hire staff that does the same thing. We're going to struggle in a lot of areas. So, you know, having the maturity to understand I need help here. I am not a great recruiter, or, you know, I'm not a great fundraiser, or whatever it might be. You know, your staff has to be able to fill those voids and plug in where, you know, you're not strong. Because, you know, I have yet to meet the person that, you know, has it all under control. There's a lot of good coaches out there that do a lot of things really well, but, you know, nobody is, I would say, the complete package. So I think that was a big thing, is just, number one, knowing where your weaknesses are, but then number two, not micromanaging those guys. You know, you brought them in to do a job, let them do their job, you know. And again, that's something Coach Vaughn allowed me to do as a young coach, is, you know, he gave me a lot of responsibilities, from, you know, game scouting, running drills and practices, running shoot-arounds, you know, putting films together, clips together. He gave me those opportunities to have the chance to learn. And, you know, that was something I knew as a head coach. You know, when I hired my staff, I wanted to give those guys those opportunities so they could grow as a coach and, you know, not micromanage, you know, their every move.
When you put together that staff, what was your philosophy on dividing roles and responsibilities amongst the staff? Did you have a discussion with them about, hey, what do you like to do? What are your strengths and weaknesses? Did you have offensive, defensive coordinator? Just what was your process for putting together the roles and responsibilities for your staff?
Another thing that, you know, the NBA was just, you know, a great learning tool for me was how to do that. So, yeah, we divided up a lot of different things. You know, we divided up our schedule, where I would give each assistant coach, and usually our staff would be two assistants and then one student assistant. But we would divide that schedule up and just allow those guys to focus on a small group of teams, 4 or 5, 6 teams, where they could kind of track them throughout the year. And have more of a, you know, their thumb on the pulse of that team. Whereas having every coach focus on the whole schedule. So, you know, I like that idea of, you know, giving a guy 6 teams. Hey, when we play Vincennes, you know, this is your scout, you know, I'm going to lean on you for everything. And, you know, I thought that worked really well. It was something I enjoyed as an NBA coach, was having those teams and just following them and, you know, having a real good idea of what they were doing, and, you know, not having to focus broadly on that. The other thing was the player development part of it. So we would break down our roster and give each assistant, you know, 3 or 4 guys, and we would rotate it as well. But, you know, 3 or 4 guys just to get in the gym with individually, you know, 4 or 5 times a week and just do skill work with. And, you know, I thought that was good, just, you know, for our assistants to develop relationships with those players, to be in the gym with them, you know, 1-on-1 or, you know, 1-on-2, and, you know, be able to do that skill development. And so, you know, that was another thing, you know, picked up at the NBA level. And then, you know, just all the other things that go into running a program, the recruiting part of it. You know, I had one assistant coach, Spencer Cook, who was just phenomenal with recruiting. You know, that was probably one of the biggest, you know, reasons why we were able to have some success at Lincoln Trail, was just, you know, our talent was upgraded every year. And, you know, he just was so good at, number one, identifying the talent and knowing that, hey, he's going to fit our system. He's going to fit our style of play. So, you know, he kind of took the lead on recruiting. You know, I knew, I trusted him to kind of narrow our list down. And, you know, he was just so good at that. We all had a hand in it, but, you know, he took the lead in that. And then just all the other aspects of the program, you know, the fundraising, you know, the making sure guys are getting to class on time, you know, the academic aspect of it. You know, we broke that all down and just empowered each coach to take the lead on those different areas, and, you know, with the head coach overseeing it all.
What was the most fun part of being a head coach at the college level?
The enjoyable parts of it. You know, I think one thing that's unique about college, that's, you know, you just don't get it anywhere else, is you're able to recruit to, you know, what you want. you don't get that in high school. You know, you have a bunch of community kids and, you know, you got what you got. You know, you might have 10 guys that are 6 foot tall. You know, it's you don't get to determine that when you're a high school coach. Same thing kind of in the NBA, especially as an assistant. You know, you lean on your general manager, your assistant GM to make those personnel moves. You know, we don't pick who's out there. Maybe some of the veteran coaches that have been around a long time, they do, but we didn't. And so, you know, you're coaching the group of guys that are put in front of you. But at the college level, you know, we're able to, hey, here's how we want to play. This is the style. This is how I think we're going to be able to win in our league. And you're able to go out and recruit that. And, you know, I really enjoyed, you know, developing an identity as a program. And, you know, kind of seeing that flourish on the floor and recruiting to, you know, what you thought would be able to win.
What was the most enjoyable part of coaching at the junior college level? And what makes the junior college experience unique for both coaches and players?
Very unique level because, you know, you're getting these talented guys in there. But, you know, that hopefully is no one's final destination. You know, everybody is trying to move on and, you know, get to that Division I level. And so, you know, that can be difficult to manage that at sometimes, you know, when you have a roster of, you know, 10, 12 guys who all have aspirations of, you know, being a scholarship player at the four-year level, you know, that's difficult. But again, being able to be honest with those guys and say, hey, here's where I see you. And, you know, here's what we're going to be able to do for you. But the most enjoyable part is, you know, recruiting that young man that needs the help, that isn't a finished product, you know, that has maybe had some struggles on the court as a player or, you know, academically. And getting that young man to a place, you know, his sophomore year where, you know, he's improved as a player. He's matured as a student athlete. And, you know, he's ready now where he wasn't ready coming out of high school. And, you know, the list of guys that, you know, we were able to move on is just, you know, it's the best feeling in the world as a coach to have that kid, you know, earn that scholarship and be able to change his life, his family's life. You know, there's no better feeling as a coach to watch that happen. And, you know, it's great too then to go watch that player go on to have success and kind of represent, you know, your junior college. It's a great feeling.
Talk a little bit about the difference between your process as a coach at the high school level and at the college level when it comes to practice planning and sort of the way you design your practices to maximize both what your players are going to get out of it individually and what you want to get out of it from a team standpoint.
You know, one of the biggest differences is just the manpower, you know, at the high school level, especially last year, you know, there'd be a lot of practices where it was just me in the gym, you know, with the team. And so when you have that situation, you know, it really changes, you know, what you're able to do in a practice. And, you know, you got to be prepared for that. But, you know, at the college level, you know, when you have 2-3 guys that, you know, you trust and that are good, you're able to do so many breakdowns you know, a lot of just diving into a lot of the little details in practice that, you know, at the high school level, when you don't have the staff, you know, you might not be able to get into, you know, all that. And so, you know, that was big, you know, having a great staff at the college level that, you know, you can trust and be able to, you know, have a breakdown on both sides or 3 or 4 baskets. But then, yeah, just the skill level, you know, like I said before, you know, every level you move up, your margin for error is different. And, you know, you teach the game different. You know, you have to have attention to little details, you know, in order to be successful at the college level. So, you know, it's very enjoyable being able to take a young man from a high school program and show them, okay, you know, yeah, you did that in high school, but, you know, here's how we're going to do it at this level now. And, you know, this is going to help you be a better player. And, you know, I really enjoyed that about the college game. And, you know, it's something different. You know, your players in a different place, skill-wise, athletically. And, you know, it's almost a different sport sometimes.
Yeah, I could see that. What about the relationships that you build with players, obviously, no matter what the level is, whether you're talking about your experience at the NBA or you're talking about college or you're talking about high school, you're trying to build those relationships with your players. How is it different in your college experience versus your high school experience in terms of how you go about spending time with the players, investing in them, and then as a result, building that relationship? Because obviously you have different situations where they're in college and they're living on campus and you've got access to them in those ways. But then at the high school level, they're living at home and there's just obviously differences. So talk a little bit about building relationships with players at both the college and high school level.
Started to bring it up right there where, you know, in high school, the kids go home to mom and dad every night. And, you know, when those kids step foot on campus, you know, it's totally different. You know, when you go out and recruit a young man, you know, you're bringing them onto campus and that parent's, you know, trusting you with their child. And, you know, there's a lot of responsibility that goes along with that where, you know, mom and dad aren't cooking them dinner every night now. Mom and dad aren't checking and waking them up in the morning. You know, it's time to grow up now when you're on a college campus. And so, you know, it's a lot different when your players are not going home now. You know, you're responsible for those guys. And, you know, one thing I was a big believer in at the college level was, you know, we told this to every parent when we recruited their son was, we're not in the business of babysitting. You know, we believe 100% that, you know, it's not for everybody. And, you know, there's some kids that are going to come in and they're going to fail the first time, you know. But, you know, the best way I know how to learn is, you know, by sometimes you have to fail. So, you know, you don't wake up for 8 a.m. in class. I'm not coming over there and waking you up. You know, you're going to learn the hard way. And, you know, not having that, you know, that your mom and dad to set that alarm clock for you, cook your breakfast, roll you out of bed, that's a tough transition for a lot of kids. And, you know, being the coach at that level, you know, it's up to you to teach these guys, you know, how to be college athletes because they have no idea. You know, it's their first experience with it and, you know, how to manage their time. You know, how to just survive, you know, on their own. You know, it's difficult. And so you can never underestimate how little guys know sometimes, you know, it's amazing, you know, just some things that you're like, wow, okay, I guess I have to teach that, you know? So yeah, it's a big difference when, you know, they're out on their own the first time and, you know, you never, even when you're home with your family at night, you know, in the back of your mind, you're still, you know, hoping the guys are, you know, getting it done, doing what they're supposed to be doing when in those dorm rooms.
Yeah, I can imagine that can be, I don't want to say scary, but I'm sure that's something that as a college coach that you're constantly trying to remind and then think about just making sure that those guys make decisions. We've all been 18, 19, 20-year-old kids and our decision-making processes at that age aren't always as good as maybe they should be. And when you think about being a college coach and the responsibility that you have to make sure that your athletes are doing the right thing for themselves, most importantly, and then also for your program, really, really important. Talk a little about the transition then back to Yuma Catholic to leave the college level, come back to high school. What was the thought process there? And kind of just give us an update on sort of where you are career-wise with your current job and kind of maybe where you think you might see this going in the future.
You know, when things end at the college level, you know, most of the time it's you're either moving up or moving laterally or you're getting fired. And, you know, that wasn't really my case. You know, we had a great 3-year run where, you know, every year our program was really improving and, but, you know, for me, you know, it was just a family decision where, you know, we had 2 young kids, and we just nowhere near family. And, you know, that was tough, to kind of be on your own in the Midwest with, you know, family on each coast. So, you know, that played a big factor into it and, just felt like, you know, it was time for a change, a new challenge, you know, that, you know, it was time to move on and, you know, it turned out to be a great decision from both aspects. You know, I really enjoy my time so far here at UMA Catholic. You know, it's a great community, great school. And, you know, just having the opportunity now to be around family has just been, you know, such a great transition for me and my kids and my wife.
To go along with that, one of the things that we've talked with lots of different coaches about is how you balance your coaching with your family. And obviously you have young kids and it's always a challenge to build the kind of program that you want to build and put in the kind of time that we all know you need to put in today in order to be able to have success. So how have you thought about, how do you think about the balance between building that successful basketball program and being dedicated to your players and your team, and also being dedicated to your home team, your family? How do you divide that up and how do you think about that?
The family has to come first, you know, and I think for me, it's hard to be a great coach if, you know, I'm not a good dad at home. So, you know, knowing that, you know, that's taken care of and, you know, my young girls are getting what they need, you know, that makes me a better coach. So, you know, you always got to put that first. And, you know, as a, looking back at it, you know, I think as a young coach, you have to be strategic, you know, about, you know, what do I want as a coach? What do I want to get out of this? And then, you know, what do I want from a family aspect? And, you know, I think the more you can plan that out and, you know, put those years where, man, you have to grind, you got to put a lot of time in away from home. You know, if you can get that and get to a position where, you know, now maybe you don't have to put, you know, the 60, 70, 80 hour weeks in, and then you can start your family. You know, I think the more you can plan that out and be strategic about it, the better. You know, I wasn't smart enough to do that. You know, my path was kind of weird, bouncing all over the place. But, you know, it worked out for me. But, you know, if I could look back and talk to young self, I would, you know, I think the more you can plan that out, the more successful you're going to be, not only as a coach, but you know, as a father as well.
When you think about the three places that you've been as a high school coach and you look at the success that you've been able to have at each of those places, can you put your finger on one or maybe two things that you feel have enabled the programs at the high school level that you've been a part of to be successful?
I think the biggest thing is just the kids. You know, I've been fortunate to coach great kids with great families. And, you know, the coaching has changed, you know, my style, my, you know, what we teach on the floor, you know, that's changed over the years. But, you know, the kids, you know, as long as you have great kids that buy into what you're teaching, you can be successful. And I think that's been the one consistent thing now at all three stops that we've had, is just the kids buy in. They're fun to coach. You know, there's nothing better than the feeling of walking into your gym and wanting to coach the group of kids, you know, you're with. You know, you don't get the eye rolls all the time and, you know, the bumping heads and fighting kids to buy in. It happens. And, you know, that makes coaching so enjoyable. And, you know, I think I've been very fortunate now to have that at all three stops at the high school level and in college. You know, we had great kids at the college level too at Lincoln Trail. But yeah, it just makes the coaching so enjoyable when you have that. And we're really fortunate again this year to have a great group of kids, super young team, but a great group of kids that are hungry and, you know, they want to learn. So it makes it fun.
How do you engage the families that are a part of your program? Do you have anything special that you do to get parents bought in and get them on the same page? Obviously, we talked a little bit earlier about that proactive communication, but tell us a little bit about what you do to make sure that you have parents on board and buying into you and your basketball program.
Things, and I think this goes to the players buying in as well, as, you know, you have to be prepared. You know, you have to, you know, just like any teacher, if you walk into the classroom and you're scrambling, you're unprepared, you're not confident in what you're teaching, parents are going to know that. Your players are definitely going to know that. And getting that buy-in is going to be next to impossible. So, you know, just having a plan in place, being confident with what that plan is, and you know, just being organized. You know, when parents see that, they're going to be, you know, a lot more, they're going to place a lot more trust in you. They're going to believe in what you're doing with your program and with their son. So being organized, having a vision for where you want to take the program, and you know, being honest and upfront, like we talked about before, with, you know, where the players fit into that, I think is big. You know, like we talked about before, if you, you know, kind of sugarcoat it and you know, lead a kid on, you know, it might not happen right away, but eventually that's going to backfire. And I think the more honest you can be about, you know, where kids fit into your program, you're going to be better off in the long run. And I think the players and the parents, the families are going to, they're going to respect that. So, you know, presenting a vision for what you want that program to be, promoting it, having pride in what that vision is, you know, kind of, hey, this is our system. This is our program. It's unique. It's special. You know, I think players buy into that, and the parents do as well. When they see their son having a great experience, you know, it's hard. You know, any parent's going to love that. And so, you know, that's the main thing. When a high school kid graduates, especially, you know, if they're part of a JV team, they're not going to remember what their record was on that JV team, you know, when they're 27, 30 years old. You know, they might remember some varsity games or whatever, but what they're really going to remember is this experience they had, you know, the camaraderie, the feeling you get of being part of that program. And so that's what we try to create at every stop, is just, you know, a feeling of, you know, building a program and being part of something that's special.
What does that look like in your mind when you talk about building an ideal experience? Because I think as a player, as a coach, as a parent, you sort of have an idea of what that feels like, what that looks like. But I'm always curious to hear, what do you think makes for a great high school basketball experience? Like, if you talk to one of your players 5 years from now or 10 years from now, how would you hope that conversation would go? What do you think they'd share about your program that makes it special and makes that unique experience that you're talking about?
It's just the little traditions you develop. I think it's the different things you instill in your players. You know, it can be as simple as, you know, you walk on campus and you see a candy wrapper on the ground, you pick it up. You know, it's how you treat the janitors. It's how you treat maybe the non-athletes that are in your, you know, your English class. You know, it's doing things and kind of branding it. Hey, this is the YC or the Yuma Catholic way we do things. And it's different than other schools. We do things different here. And, you know, it's what we'll go the extra mile, and it's what sets us apart. It's what makes our program unique. And it can even be your on-court things, you know. Hey, you know, here's how we rebound the basketball. Here's how we run hard in transition. Here's how we defend. And, you know, when you package that and say, you know, we're going to demand more of you than, you know, this other school, kids buy into that. And I think you have to have that to have a special program.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I think if you can do that, then you're really on your way to having something special. We're coming up close to an hour and a half here, Luke. So I want to wrap up with one final two-part question. First part, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what's the biggest challenge that you see in front of you? And then number two, when you think about what you get to do each and every day, coaching basketball and being with your family, what brings you the most joy? So your biggest challenge and your biggest joy.
Biggest challenge right now, you know, we're going to have a talented team coming back. We're coming off a very successful season, region champs. And, you know, the bar has been raised this year as far as Yuma Catholic basketball goes. So, you know, living up to those expectations this year is going to be a huge challenge. And, you know, still doing it with a relatively young team that maybe hasn't had some of the pressure situations and some of the big games that they're going to need. You know, we're going to have to learn on the fly. And, you know, we have a group this year that's talented enough to possibly win a state championship. But, you know, we're going to have to learn quickly. So that's going to be a huge challenge for us this year with a heavy sophomore junior group. But, you know, I really like our team this year, and it's going to be a fun year. The thing that gives me the most joy, the great mix right now of the family and work life, you know, being a college coach, you know, man, you miss out on a lot of things. You're away recruiting, and, you know, you're just burning both ends of the candle a lot of times. It's difficult to have that balance. And, you know, like we talked about earlier, you know, having that work family balance just makes you a better coach. You know, I just, it re-energizes you. So, you know, that's something that's been very rewarding, and, you know, just being part of a special community has been very fun.
That's well said. And I think we've learned a lot from all of your different experiences at all of these different levels of the game. And I think your journey, not only have you been able to grow and then experience these different levels and share that with players, and now getting a chance to share this with our audience. Again, we're very, very appreciative. Before we get out, can you share how people can reach out to you, how they can find out more about you, what you're doing in your program, whether you want to share email, social media, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
I kind of started doing a few videos on YouTube. It's called Stuck on Hoops. I just have a few things on there, just some simple breakdowns of some, you know, some basketball things on there, and hope to expand on that in the future. Yeah. And if anybody ever has any questions, man, I love other coaches, fellow coaches reaching out, and, you know, people were so good to me as a young coach. And, you know, something I'm really looking forward to as I get a little older and hopefully a little wiser is, you know, being able to help other young coaches out in the business. So coachlukestuckey@gmail.com, shoot me an email anytime, and love to connect with other coaches.
Fantastic. Luke, can I thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule tonight to jump on with us? Really appreciate your time. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.